Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy.
7 minutes past six. Hello and welcome to Sports Day, the Thursday edition, the day after trade period. Jordan Dawson, arguably the biggest name next to Adam Cherrett, to move clubs. He's going to join us in a matter of seconds. That's the deal that went down. The deal that didn't go down was Bobby Hill getting to the Bombers. His manager, Colin Young, is going to join us later in the show as well. It is a jam-packed show. Plenty to discuss. There is a fresh challenge of Jeff Kennett and the Hawks presidency. We'll discuss that as well. But I'm not here by myself.
And now, here is the host of Jeopardy,
Jimmy Bartel.
Yes, Zoe, he's back on the panel and we like it. Now, for those of you who are wondering, what on earth did I just listen to? That's because our co-host, James Bartel, instead of going home and doing what normal people do, and that is watch Netflix or maybe Stan or maybe a little bit of Amazon Prime, maybe a DVD rerun that they haven't seen in a while, Jimmy goes home and watches old reruns of Jeopardy.
No.
With Alex Trebek.
Alex Trebek, your host for this evening. It's not a rerun to me because it's the first time I've seen it.
Yeah, but they are still are. How old are they? 20 years?
Yeah, I think because they've done so many because it's an institution in America. Jeopardy's been going on forever.
I'm surprised that you didn't watch these when they were coming out when you were in your late 20s.
Well, I don't think they were on Australian. I don't think they were on Australian free to air then. I found them. They're on Viceland.
I think our next guest, Jordan Dawson, would have absolutely no idea what Jeopardy is because he grew up in a different time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he's probably doing what normal 24-year-olds do. And he's got some good show. He's watching Squid Games on Netflix.
Oh, I've seen that. I've clocked that.
Oh, you've clocked it. Good Jordan job. Dawson's clocked trade period. He got it done. I'm not sure he personally, but finally the move went through. I'm sure there would have been some nervous days as he was waiting to make the move from the Swans to the Crows. He joins us live on Sports Day. Jordan, welcome to you. Congratulations.
Cheers. Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks for having me.
A few nerves along the way, I'm sure.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I think the last 10 days have been pretty full on, but obviously it's a massive relief. Getting the trade done and both parties were somewhat happy, I think, so that's good.
Jordan, further that, obviously trade period, it's all, I guess, the misinformation that goes on, gets put out there and people offering all their opinions on it. How hard is it to tune that out and just listen to what, the Swans and the Crows are telling you?
Yeah, well, I just tried to stay off my phone as much as I could and not really read the media. Talking to Michael, my manager, and he was pretty clear before it sort of happened that, the trade week will be pretty busy and there'll be a lot of articles and a lot of media stuff, just obviously because that's the important time. So it's going to, not everything's going to be true that you read. So try and sort of stay away from it, which is what I did. Obviously it's a massive relief now.
Not going to make you, say what you didn't like about Port Adelaide, but what did you like about Adelaide that the Crows that made it attractive for you to go there?
Yeah, I think growing up I was a Crows fan and, idolised a few of those players like Ricciuto and McLeod and Tyson Edwards and these guys. And I think just the fit that, Nixie and the coaches put towards me of where they see me playing and the role I can play with the group was really enticing and I feel like I can add a lot to their group.
So Jordan, what do you want to achieve now as an Adelaide player? I mean, it's interesting to me because obviously you've gone home, which we all understand, but you've left a team that really looks like it's on the precipice of challenging for a flag, for a side that may do that as well, but probably not as quickly. What's the main ambition for you in your first year at the Crows?
Yeah, for me, I think there's a lot of the demographic of the group is quite young. I think it reminds me of Sydney last year and probably the year before, just of they've been competitive in a lot of games, but the experience wasn't quite there. And I feel like I can sort of be one of the older guys in that younger group coming through and have sustained success. And obviously, I know that the last couple of years have been pretty tough for them, but they're definitely building. And I feel like I can add a lot to the group on and off the field and add some leadership as well.
positional wise. We saw you have a fantastic year, half back, wing, hitting the scoreboard, pushing forward. Cut and pace, put that in at the Crows or something a little bit different?
Yeah, I think so. I'm talking to Nixie and the coaches. I think that's where they want me to play, and I'm definitely happy with playing sort of up on the wing and mid and stuff like that. I feel like that's obviously where I play my best footy, and I feel like I can add a lot of value to the team up there as well.
Geez, they got you for a bit of a bargain, didn't they? Melbourne's future first, and that could be pick 18. You're a top 10, top 5 pick, aren't you, Jordan?
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I don't do the trades, mate. I just sat back and let the team sort that out. So I'm not sure you're the expert in that area.
You don't make the waves; you just ride them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, don't get sucked into that. Hey, is there a player from is there a player from the Crows that you're interested to get to know? Because when you go to another club or a player comes from another club, they've got a certain opinion of some players. Is there someone that you're interested to find out about or from another way that you'd love to just see how they go about their business?
Yeah, I think I've sort of already got to know Paul Seedsman a little bit, and feel like we can work pretty closely on the wings and with the midfield group. And he's a ripping fella, and I'm looking forward to sort of getting to know him a bit more and working more on field as well with him.
Jordan, can you just take us through whatever you want to tell us or don't want to tell us, the main reason for wanting to go home? Because, you know, obviously in a normal world, going home gets criticised when you can move so freely between state and state. But in the last 18 months or 2 years, COVID has really changed a lot of things with that. We've seen, you know, Lachie Neal and his partner and wife, Jules, wanting to raise their child in Western Australia. And, you know, in usual circumstances, it would be, well, you could just go home whenever you want. But Western Australia border is currently closed at the moment. Has COVID really made it harder for guys like you wanting to spend more time with their family?
Yeah, definitely. I think probably the last 2 years we've spent maybe 2 months, if not more, 3 months on the road both seasons. So that's been pretty testing, and that sort of pull to come back home and be closer to friends and family and be able to play footy was there. And yeah, I couldn't really deny it by the end when I requested a trade.
Maybe now you'll be too close. You're going to move straight back into the family home or make sure you find somewhere else quick smart?
Nah, I won't be doing that. The family are about 3 hours south in Robe, so
okay.
It might be a bit too far to travel, I think, but I'll just look for somewhere in Adelaide.
Which is a good excuse for you, not being home every single day of the week.
Exactly.
Jordan, it's great to have you on. I'm sure it's been a whirlwind, mate, the last 2 or 3 weeks. I can only imagine the anxiety that goes with wanting to be traded and it gets done on the second last day, but you're there now. Where do we find you at the moment? Are you in South Australia?
Yeah, yep. I've just been back and forth from Adelaide and Robe, so I'm just sort of hanging around those areas. I'll try and get up to Adelaide as much as I can before the pre-season starts, and I've already met a few boys and coaches and stuff, so it'll be nice to get familiar with everyone and the facilities and everything like that before we actually crack into it.
And no doubt you'll be winning the first time trial on day one of pre-season?
I think there's a few good runners, so I wouldn't put that bet on, but I'm looking to come back fit and healthy. That's the main thing.
Jordan, well done. Good luck in your first season at the Crows.
Cheers. Thanks for having me, boys.
Jordan Dawson, their new Adelaide recruit. First time we've had him on this show. Speaks very well. He's a good pickup for the Crows and I reckon a significant loss for the Swans. Taking the pick in the 50s, pick 56. A few years ago. So it's a nice pick for the Swans.
Yeah, well done by the Swans and their development, but they're very good at that. They've turned rookie list players into all Australians.
Tom Papley.
Yeah, they've got heaps of them they've done that with. If you go back to Nick Smith and guys like that.
Nick Smith's a great one.
Yeah, so, buy low, sell high. It's great list management, great development.
Jimmy Bartel is here for the new McCafe blend. Coffee fit for an Aussie. More on Sports Day after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and the new Kia Niro, the electric SUV range, which has now landed. A report surfacing today that Hawks president Jeff Kennett is now set for a new challenge with a group of supporters setting up a campaign. So we already know about Australian super boss Ian Silk, and also that former premiership player Andy Gowers. Andy Gowers, the father of former Bulldog Billy Gowers, for what it's worth. Hawks for Change has backers among the club's coterie groups. Triple premiership player James Morrissey fronting the campaign. So we spoke to Jeff a couple of days ago. He got re-elected in October 2020 for 3 more years. So he's still got, what's that, the best part of 2 years left, or two years left.
Sorry, Sam. Because I saw that article come up and I was just curious who the people being. The Hawks for Change aren't saying Ian Silk and Andy Gowers shouldn't keep going for it. They're just gathering more people to challenge the board. Yeah. One of them I was just reading, Bruce Stevenson. This has been reported, so don't get stuck into us. Bruce Stevenson, who is a former director.
Yep.
You mentioned Morrissey. Also, Lynn Sutton, who is one of the coterie group leaders. So it's a lot of people from the coterie group. So the important people that help the club going on with big financial contributions every year.
So there's rumblings.
Yeah. They're disappointed with the way Jeff's handled certain things. That's the snapshot of the article. The exit of Alistair Clarkson.
13-13-32. I just want to take calls and get a temperature from this. Hawthorn fans, if you're listening, because when we had Jeff on, I got a lot of, and our show did, a lot of action on social media around, oh, well, Jeff took you guys to task and we're right behind Jeff. And that was very parochial Hawthorn fans supporting Jeff. But some others that you speak to say, well, we don't want him to be there anymore. And, you know, look what's happened to the club in the last 18 months. I am really interested as to whether Hawthorn fans are happy with Jeff at the helm or whether it is time for change now with a new coach.
What were they unhappy about with the questioning that wasn't already out in the public eye that Jeff had actually put?
No. You'd have to ask them. 13-13-32, Hawks fans, what do you make of these latest challenges? Do you think that Jeff is going to stay as president? Do you think that he should stay as president? 13-13-32 on the Harcourts open line. We'll find a prize for the best caller. Lawrence will go into his drawer of prizes. Another interesting thing that Andrew Wu wrote in the Sydney Morning Herald today, he had an interview with Andrew Pridham, who says that the AFL basically needs to close and change the mechanism which allows clubs who finish last, or not even just last, but towards the bottom, to use the threat of pre-season draft.
Hmm.
I actually agree with him. I thought that it was ridiculous Carlton got Jack Martin for free from the Gold Coast Suns. Now, weird situation because Gold Coast will say, well, we've had so many picks in that draft that we didn't need another one.
Hmm.
So we were happy to play the game and see if Carlton blinked, and Carlton didn't. So that was a weird situation. But I kind of agree with and Andrew actually goes out of his way to say it's not Adelaide's fault.
No.
And Mark Rusciuto went on radio and said, well, we've got the preseason draft, which they absolutely do. But do you think, Jimmy, in future, you shouldn't be allowed to get someone like a Jack Martin, someone like a Jordan Dawson for free if negotiations break down?
Yeah, well, it's not an even playing field to start with, and a lot of things in the AFL aren't, but it actually completely tilts it in the favour of having that lever to pull because then it's not a real negotiation.
I agree with that. Who was the last player that...
Adelaide, when they got Jackson Hatley, they used the preseason draft as a threat, and it ended up happening, and they took him in the preseason draft.
Yep.
I think Essendon used, and this is where the conversation last night regarding Adrian Dodoro and Jace McCartney, where there's supposed angst between the two, even though the two gentlemen respect each other a lot, under Jai Caldwell, because Essendon had the leverage of using the preseason draft.
So who was the last player that, I mean, because the preseason draft is really for players that get delisted or that fall out of favour with their club and a deal can't get done or no one wants them and then they fall to a preseason draft. What I'm saying to you is, who was the last really good player who actually went into the preseason draft and got picked up by a club that he wasn't talking to? Last one I can think is Nick Stevens.
Well, didn't Luke Ball use that, but he put a lot of...
cash on his head.
Yeah.
That was different, though, because he was trying to get there. Nick Stevens was trying to get to Collingwood, and I think from memory, Port Adelaide wanted Alan Dydak to go the other way. I know that there's Collingwood and Port Adelaide fans yelling at the radio in unison at the moment saying that I'm wrong, but that's my memory of it. And then Port Adelaide... Collingwood said, okay, well, you're not going to let him go for free, so we'll just wait for you to blink. They didn't, and he ended up going to Carlton.
I get it, but I don't know what the solution is, and that's the problem. What solution do you come up with unless you do away with the preseason draft? Because it's always going to be a tool and a leverage. And if I'm a list manager and my sole responsibility is to my club, and again, it's not blaming any clubs, I'm using every tool available in the negotiating table.
Well, I think you'd have to say, it would have to be specific per example. It would have to say, if you nominate a club who finishes in the bottom four as the club that you want to be traded to, that club is not allowed to take them in the preseason draft.
Yeah.
It gets a bit messy.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, if the AFL can look at the mechanism. I mean, Andrew Pridham's been very successful in footy for a long time. He knows what he's talking
Absolutely.
About. Absolutely. And it didn't sound like sour grapes when I'm reading the quotes that Andrew Wu wrote from him. It just sounded like, look, I'm not blaming Adelaide, but in future, if this situation happens again, and you just said you've been through it with GWS, we don't think it should be used as leverage.
No, and I agree. There's no clubs to blame, but it's a tool. It's an unfair tool, but that's part of the game.
It's part of it, yeah.
Our whole entire competition is unfair.
That's right. It's not a level playing field.
Yeah.
And we know that from interstate clubs versus Victoria. We know that from franchise and expansion clubs.
When you start a season with 18 teams with 22 for 23 rounds.
Automatically, you're not even.
It's not even.
Yeah. Rod's in Cape Patterson. Wants to talk about Jeff Kennett. G'day, Rod.
G'day. How are you, boys?
We're good.
Listen, yeah, good. Yes, I'm talking about Jeff Kennett.
Yep.
I'm not happy with him being in charge anymore. I also was extremely unhappy about the way that Clarko was handled. I have respect for Sam Mitchell. He was a fantastic player for us. But I just think that the whole thing is wrong. Jeff Kennett is a smart man, but his biggest problem is his mouth.
Yeah.
He says things before he thinks it through.
Yep, I think many people would agree with both of those statements. Firstly, being he's extremely intelligent, and the second is that he shoots from the hip a bit. Dave's in Melton. G'day, Dave.
G'day, Sam. Jimmy, how are we?
Dave, go ahead, mate.
Yeah, problem with Jeff is his DNA is the same DNA as car salesmen. They're all full of crap.
Thank you, Dave. Yep. Not quite as nice as Rod was.
I enjoy Jeff because he challenges the groupthink that goes on a bit in footy. Like, he's willing to debate. And he said that last night. He goes, I'm all for having debates. You can agree to disagree in football.
Absolutely.
Mm.
Yeah. But I think if any other president other than Jeff Kennett did what he did to Alistair Clarkson, I don't think he'd still be there.
It depends. It's not up to us. It's the Hawthorn members. And you just said you're getting robust feedback.
Yeah.
That they are big fans of it.
Yeah, I speak to a lot of Hawthorn people, and there's people on both sides. But, yeah, I think that my personal opinion on it, and this is not all on Jeff, but I think a large part of it is that Hawthorn have put Sam Mitchell under unnecessary pressure to start his coaching tenure.
He was always going to be under pressure, whether it was this year, next year, or 3 years taking over Clark.
No, but not like this. I think that in hindsight's such a wonderful thing, but I said at the time, they just needed to say to Alistair, if they didn't want him to be coach, they needed to say, look, we don't think we're going to renew your contract. We would love you to coach next year if you'd like to. We're not naming a replacement for you. There's no handover. And at the end of that period, you go to Sam and say, look, we want you to apply. We think you're a red hot chance of getting it, but we're not giving it to you yet. Do another year under Clarko, and then we'll get the best coach available. Mm. I just think that they've put, and I think Sam's going to be an amazing coach, by the way, so it might all be a moot point, but I think they've put him under unnecessary risk. And I think that Jeff could have fixed that. And I think haggling with Alistair Clarkson over money that absolutely owed him after they sacked him was ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree with that. But, mate, like you said, the decision might be right, but the execution just slightly off.
Decision may absolutely be right, but it's all about the optics. And the optics of it.
Oh, did you just go AFL terminology?
I didn't mean to.
Optics.
Maybe I need a break. We need a break. We'll be back after this.
Sam came into our club and played some significant footy in the first 2 years. He's had some troubles in his off-season. He really wants to become a midfielder, which was the conversation that we had with both him and his manager through this trade period. Then there's some things that Sam needs to do better. You'll all get to see whether Sam has a proper commitment to play at AFL level through what he does through this pre-season.
Oh, you'll all get to see if Sam has the proper commitment to play at AFL level.
To be a midfielder.
That's putting the acid.
That's good.
That's great. I think Chris Davies is one of the best heads of footy in the comp. I think he would have been great in the AFL job as well. Interesting. Sam Powell-Pepper. Can he get back to where he was? Hey, Do you know who Chloe McArdle is?
I can swim a bit, can't she?
Thank you. Today, broke the world record for the most amount of English Channel swims. It was her 44th.
How far is it for those people playing at home?
So it's 34 kilometres. It took her 10 hour and 1 minute. I'm sure she's annoyed it didn't take her 9 hours and 59 minutes. It's from the Point de la Côte in the French commune of Ordingen to Kent in southeast England, 34 Ks. She's also done the triple cross before.
Tumble turn?
So 34 one way, 34 back, 34 back. 102K swim.
I wonder what the rules are with that. Like, are you allowed, you have to touch the sand, turn around, come back, or are you allowed a bit of a rest?
That's very funny. I don't know. It is an amazing story. If you don't know much about it, we'll try to get her on. Lawrence, if you could just give Chloe a call, we'll get her on this week.
She's Sports Day Zone.
Sports Day Zone. She couldn't swim. She couldn't float at the age of 10. And she tells a story about how she was reasonably good at lots of different sports, but she was never great at anything. And she realised in her teens, the one weapon that she had that no one else had was her mind. And so she just decided that she was going to start long distance swimming. That is, I love those stories.
That's where you wish you could record your thoughts while you're swimming. It's not like you can chuck the iPod in.
What would she think about while she's swimming, by the way? What do you do while you're swimming the English Channel, which can't be warm? I think it's too cold for sharks. It's probably not that big of...
Yeah, well, that was the other thing. I hope there's nothing chompy below me.
Well, yeah, she hasn't got a cage.
No.
Campbell Brown's done the English Channel swim. I think he swam with a cage. I'm just trying to remember. Anyway, it's quite incredible. So 43 times.
Once is incredible.
She has done the English Channel cross. We might try to get her on. I just saw a video on the news of her being interviewed, and she looked fatigued. More sports day coming up, including Colin Young, player manager of Bobby Hill and Rory Lobb. Both didn't get where they wanted to go.
Andrew and Colin is the management team at Corporate Sports, because they've got a job to do and trying to do the best thing by their client and wishes at the moment. But we've got a job to do running a footy club, and the business is about winning games. So we can't go backwards.
Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and the new Kia Niro. That was the voice of Jason McCartney, the head of footy, also the list manager of GWS, speaking to us last night. The Bobby Hill deal didn't go through. His manager is Colin Young, and he joins us live on Sports Day. Welcome, Colt.
Hi, guys. How you going?
We're good. You've had a night to sleep on it now, Colin. How do you sort of feel about Bobby going back to the Giants?
Yeah, not much sleep, but Bobby sort of... Well, he is Andrew McDougall's direct client. So, but I was certainly in the passenger seat to yesterday. Andrew was driving it. So it was a bit disappointing and deflating for everyone involved, the families, Bobby, and certainly us working through that didn't come off at the end.
So I just wanted to ask you from your perspective, because I think a lot of people are interested in how player managers work, Colin. Did you find out sort of too late? Like, would you have liked to have known weeks earlier that Bobby, in fact, wanted to go to Victoria? How did that all play out?
You always try and get as much time and leeway to help the clubs out if something like this is happening. I mentioned before when we had Brad Hill leave Fremantle and go to St Kilda, I notified, Fremantle basically in March that's what they're thinking, and then again in July that it was going to, they were definitely keen to go. So you try and give every person in the group or the party working with the opportunity as much time as they can to get this done. Going into the trade period, I thought that, I'd have the quietest trade period in 18 years. I wasn't going to have anything done. I knew that Bobby had met with Andrew, over a 2-year period, thinking that he might want to go and live in Melbourne with family and friends. He'd like the support down there. So I've also mentioned before that, I did have a chat with Graham Wright when he was at Hawthorn, that when they were looking for some small forwards, and I knew that Jason and the club had a really tight salary cap and a list spot, that maybe Zach Langdon and Bobby might go down there about 18 months ago. But Graham had a lot on his plate at that time, and in the end, I think Zach Langdon, we did go. Zach went to West Coast and Bobby stayed. So it's been hovering for a while, and as he's only 21 years of age, I'm not too sure, when I was 21, I was going to make this decision, made sure that he really took his time to make sure that this is what he wanted to do. And then probably about 2 weeks out, he mentioned Andrew and I at a function that he definitely wanted to go. So you know, you had a look at the clubs. I know people say there's 10 clubs in Melbourne, but not every club's looking for a small forward. We sort of thought there was 5 clubs to be involved, so we spoke to the 5 clubs. Of that, 2 really picked up the ball and ran with it, and that's when it came out. Basically, when I and I know it sounds strange, you know, we got the call from Jason Tuesday morning about 10:30. I was on the phone for about an hour and I got back to Jason about 11:30, and he mentioned that he'd spoken to Fremantle about the possible facilitation of a trade between GWS Fremantle and Rory Lobb. So myself, you know, thinking, well, this could happen now because if Bobby does pull the trigger, which I think he will, you know, we might be able to remove, put some of his contract towards Rory's, and the deal could get done as long as all the clubs, you know, got what they were looking for at the end of the deal.
So Adrian Dodoro told us last night, Colin, that they knew about a week before. So this is basically the start of the second week of trade period, or the start of the first week if you count the, when it officially starts. When did GWS know?
I think the Friday. So Tuesday they rang me about Rory, and I reckon Friday mid-afternoon, Andrew might have spoke to Jace. Unfortunately, Andrew's not here at the moment. Otherwise, I'd put him on for you. Maybe give him a call next week to have a chat. So Friday afternoon. So
Friday with what, 5 days left of the trade period?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that's right.
That doesn't leave a lot of time for you to get a deal done, does it?
No. Well, if the planets lined up, it was okay. And I think you guys were saying through this that a future second was a pretty good deal for GWS. It probably didn't leave a lot of time for GWS to look for a forward, or if they thought, you know, if they needed a small forward to replace Bobby. I was always thinking that they might want the big, you know, lead-up forward of Roy back, and probably could get away with Bobby leaving. And that's where, unfortunately, I think Jason also mentioned on the media this morning or yesterday that, you know, clubs look for opportunities, and it's possible that sometimes, or someone else's strategy at another club might, you know, meet with what they were looking for or looking to do with GWS, but unfortunately it wasn't the case this time.
And so you had a situation that really was affecting both of your players, and it could have helped both of your players.
I thought it could, and I thought it could help everyone. You know, you certainly, you know, when you're going to trade, I know it sounds strange and people don't believe it, but I think most of the more experienced managers look for a pathway that's going to suit all parties, and it's a win for everyone, you know, and the members are happy, the supporters are happy, the media, that's a good deal for everyone, that's well done, got done. So that's what, you know, we honestly were looking forward to do. But unfortunately, you know, it just it didn't happen, unfortunately. Yeah.
Colin, Jimmy Bartelli, obviously I've stayed out of that chat there for obvious reasons, but I've got one for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've got one for you. It's... the NBA, of course, there's a lot of news going on with Kyrie Irving and the fact that he doesn't want to get vaccinated for whatever reasons, and it's created a big situation for his team.
And Kyrie's just been told that he's not allowed to be a part-time player. So yes. It's either get vaxxed or bye-bye.
So what happens in the AFL? Because we will have a decision on this soon regarding vaccination requirements for players. How will you manage that as a player manager?
Well, I've been back, so I'm all good to go. But you're talking about players. Funny enough, I did some media this afternoon regarding a West Coast Eagle player. There were some rumours and innuendo about Jack Darling not wanting to get vaxxed, being an anti-vaxxer, which was not true. But basically, you know, the nation knows that if you don't get vaxxed, you know, you won't be on a plane, you won't be allowed to, you know, enter a stadium. So I'm pretty sure that, you know, if you want to continue playing football, you'll need to get vaxxed.
What would happen, Cole, if you had a client of yours that didn't want to?
Well, unfortunately, he wouldn't be able to play. It's out of my hands. He, you know, legally, he won't be able to probably play football because he won't be able to play, and he won't be in the stadium. But, and he loses, I'd imagine, unless there's something there that I haven't read, he'd probably lose his contract.
But existing contracts wouldn't have that written into them, would they?
Well, that's interesting, yeah.
No, they didn't. No, they don't. But as I said to you, sometimes, you know, there's the new CBA that's been done for the AFLPA coming up soon. I know that they're in discussions with the AFL. You know, there could be, you know, a possible, you know, something put into this. I don't know. It's sort of out of my hands. But basically, I know if I want to travel and meet my clients, I've got to be vaxxed. I'm vaxxed. I'm ready to go. I'm just hoping our Premier will let me get out and get back as soon as we can, because I'd like to get on the road again. But that's what my understanding is, Jimmy. That's, you know, you're going to have to be backs. And I haven't heard of anyone. I only heard the rumours about a couple of West Coast players, but certainly none of my players that we represent have said that they're not going to get backs. So it looks all good from our point of view.
Yeah, just a bit of news. Tomorrow is the deadline day for the first jab, and then you're not allowed to attend the football club.
So oh, that's here in Victoria. Yeah, they've mandated it. Yeah, October 15th. You've got to have a first jab to be able to work.
Yep.
Well, definitely all our WA players playing in Victoria have all been jabbed, so we're all good to go.
So you're in WA now, Cole. You can't really leave the state, can you?
Oh, I could probably get over to Adelaide and back, but Scotty Lightfoot's over here. Sammy Powell-Pepp will probably be back soon. I think most of our players are back from Adelaide, so we'll catch up them over here. But as I said, as soon as those borders open up and I'm allowed to come back, I'll be over there and I'll probably spend a month or so in Victoria just getting back into it, because that's where it all happens.
We just had a bit of audio played from Chris Davies actually talking about Sam Powell-Pepp, saying, you know, we'll find out in the next couple of months if he wants to work hard enough to become an AFL midfielder. Is this a big year for him in that regard?
Yeah, it's a big year. As you know, when you're out of contract, you know, it seems to be that it's a pretty big year for that, but it is a big year. And the conversation that Sam's had with Chris and probably Cripper has been honest, and you can't, that's the best thing in with the AFL, with these clubs, that the honesty is the best policy, and certainly a direct conversation with Sam where it sits, where he wants to go. With playing in the midfield, they've had that, and I'm pretty sure he'll be back, and you'll find a huge, fit, flying bull playing in the centre next year with Port. They've got some, you know, Cripper's put probably one of the best lists together in the AFL. I actually tipped them for the flag this year, so I got that wrong. But they've got those stars, Rosie and Butters, that probably could go in the midfield with a bit of flair. So he'll be up against it, but he knows he has to do it. And, it's going to be an interesting year next year.
It is. A week's a long time in footy. A year's an even longer time. Could we see a situation where Bobby Hill starts for a side that charges towards a grand final or preliminary final and then decides to actually he's going to stay?
Yeah, that's a conversation that we'll probably have with Bobby and his family next week. Bobby took up to see some family in Northern, and his dad stayed behind. His dad actually sat with Andrew and I during the trade period yesterday. So he came into the office about 10:30, sat down with Andrew, and he sat with us all the way through, listening to our phone calls, listening to how we're operating. And then we went for a beer straight after, and it was obviously pretty deflating. But we all agreed to catch up next week to have a chat. Bobby is out of contract next year. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting year looking at that one as well, to see how it all goes with the support over there, with GWS.
Cole, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
No, thanks, guys. Cheers, boys.
Colin Young there from Corporate Sport Australia, play manager of Bobby Hill and Rory Lobb, as well as the likes of Sam Powell-Pepp and a few others. More on Sports Day with Jimmy Bartel after this. You are listening to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Cansar's most trusted energy retailer, and for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Sam McClure and James Bartel with you for the next hour. The family on Sports Day is back together as well. Lawrence producing, Zoe's back behind the panel. Not that we don't love Matt, but it's, you know, when you get your starting team on the park, Jimmy. And that's what makes her part of the starting team.
Oh, wow.
Without even asking for it. It's good. We've got Henry Moran, BBC cricket reporter, journalist, broadcaster. He's going to join us a little later in the hour. Plenty going on with the Ashes. They've obviously announced their squad in the last few days. A couple of important people missing for the English team. I noticed that there's already been a couple of Australians in the media claim that we're going to win 4-0, Alan Border being one of them. In fact, Border might have said 3-1, Brennan Julian 4-0. I'm not sure I'd be making these bold statements when we've played four. You think 3-1?
3-1.
We've played four tests and they've played 14.
Have you seen their batting lineup?
Apart from Joe Root. It's very, very shallow.
Joe Root can't bat all six.
They've still got a good couple of fast bowlers, though, that can tear through us.
52 years of age.
Yeah, they're older than you.
Yeah, well, that's not hard when I'm your age.
You are significantly older than me.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
How old are you?
How old do you think I am?
Don't look a day over 41.
I'm going to let that slide because I'm in a good mood. Ash Brown's always in a good mood. The chief of the AFL record, who, as Jared put it last week, Jimmy, now this time of the year, becomes a social and political commentator as well. Welcome to you, Ash.
Hello, boys. Good to be with you both. Yes, now I've got this time on my hands, I can take care of and pay attention to everything else other than football.
Well, we'll start with footy if we can. The wash-up from the trade period. Ash, I'm not trying to talk things down because we in the media do our best not to do that. But when Adam Chera and Jordan Dawson are the two biggest trades going through over a three-week period, people like to say it's two. It's not. They turn it into three. It makes you rethink the whole trade period, doesn't it?
It does. Look, I'm on an island with this one. I think we've got trade period all wrong. And I know that the company for which I work is a major commercial partner of the AFL when it comes to trade period, but it's all wrong. I mean, it shouldn't be built around as a content driving exercise. It should be more fluid. It should take place for much longer. We shouldn't make a big deal about every single trade that goes through. It should just be part of the course of footy clubs doing what they do over a 6, 7, 8 month period. So that to me, I think I said this on this spot last year as well. When you cram it into 8 days or 10 days, whatever it is, and build an online radio station around it, it just takes on a life of its own. And when it doesn't disappoint, when it doesn't deliver what it has in other years, and we came off a very good one last year, obviously, people are disappointed. And then we build up the wrong stories. It's just been a bit shambolic this year, I think.
So let's unpack that a little bit, Ash. So you think we should basically from round one till the end of finals, it should be a fluid trade period?
No, I think from October 10 or October 15 to June 30, it should be a fluid trade period. There should be an exchange of players in all that time, like it is in the American sporting leagues.
So a player in round five could play for one club and round six play for another?
Yeah, as it did when I was growing up, and it was all fine.
Yeah.
No,
I accept that. Yeah, it's a really interesting proposition. I like your idea better than what we currently have. I'm probably somewhere in the middle, Jimmy. I don't know where you are here. We haven't discussed it off air, but I reckon we could just... We could do what we're doing and shorten it and have a 5-day trade period. And I don't think you need to have 12 hours of radio a day and every single outlet pretending that pick 55 is the most important thing of all time.
Yeah, or you could meet somewhere in the middle and allow players and managers to have those discussions, and then they can all be executed over in that window that we're talking about. So at the moment, it's frowned upon and you're not allowed to sort of really talk to currently contracted players. But if he actually had an open understanding, well, if players do have in the back of their mind that they want to go back home to a different state, whatever reasons that managers concoct at this time of year, well, it can just be had. And then we don't have to try and make things up at the end of the year, or it's not being done under a 12-hour window, but you have a week period where all of it can get officially filed. And as Ash said, he can highlight, for example, Sam McClure has agreed to go to Carlton. And it's done.
I feel like. It's interesting, Ash. I think somewhere in the midst of this discussion is the right answer. I look at the Premier League, Jimmy, and they have the January transfer window, which obviously goes for the length of January. And the way they do it, I quite like, which is if you read the Telegraph, Ash, online as I do, or you read BBC or you listen to a bit of Talk Sport, they will talk about moves if they're happening or if there have been updates. But if they're not, they just talk about something else. Whereas I think we've almost got to a point where we force this content. And if, you know, pick a name out of a hat, if Cal Toomey reports that Gold Coast are considering trading pick 32, all of a sudden that becomes a topic for the 16 different platforms that we're looking at.
It would almost become scandalous that your journalist gets the scoop. Sorry to borrow your nickname there. But you have to... It becomes the story that the fact that the journalist gets
has reported. Yeah, I know. It's actually quite frightening. And it's only getting worse, Ash.
Yeah, and it's absolutely getting worse. And it's the AFL's desire. And I say why the AFL does it, because it gives them a three-week window to prolong the discussion about football straight off the grand final. And trade radio starts 36 hours after the grand final.
Yeah.
So it's creating content. And this year when there's no, because of COVID, all the off-season sports, the summer sports haven't got a start yet, really. There's no A-League, there's no NBL, there's no... there's a bit of women's cricket. The Spring Carnival's not quite big because the punters can't go, so all the noise around the Spring Carnival isn't what it usually is. They've had it to themselves. I mean, so that's probably made it worse. You had no sporting competition and not a lot of big names. It just made it even worse than it usually is. So I sound like the grumpy old man here, and sorry to the listeners if that's how I'm coming across, but I think it needs fixing. And I, having said that, I have no great confidence that it will be anytime soon.
One last one on that, Ash, before we actually go to the actual trade period. A lot of people at Canter, probably what it's been discussed by yourself, is you watch the NRL Grand Final and a player receives the ball and Rabs goes, and he's off to Canterbury next year. He's heading over to the UK or he's playing for the Broncos or the Storm. And we had probably out of the Grand Final sides, at least half a dozen players from each side already committed elsewhere.
Yeah, I'm not advocating that, Jimmy. I don't think that should happen. I just think the trades take place. You shut trades down on June 30th and you pick it up again October 10th, you know, a week after Grand Final, as we do now, you pick it up again. But the window goes much longer. If the window is 8-9 months, it won't have this constant... The talk will be about the trades that get executed. There won't be all this speculation and what have you that just drives, and fake trades and all this stuff that drives, that's just incessant. But I think I think it's unbecoming.
Well, no, I mean, it is unbecoming. And we've reached a point of saturation in our industry now where we've got to decide to go one of two ways. It's either we wait and we actually report with veracity and know that we're right, or we just go down the path that we're going down, which is it doesn't really matter if it's half right or half wrong. The more we report, the more clicks we get, the more advertising dollars we get, and just keep going down that road. Now, if we want to be taken seriously as an industry, which I think we all do, by our fans and our listeners who really make up the backbone of the industry, then we have to decide to hold a little bit. Now, it makes it very hard to report stories when you're expected to come up with something 14 hours a day, Ash.
That's right. And I think trade radio, you know, again, it was a wonderful idea at the Tyson Hutchie.
And it's still a great idea.
And it's still a great concept. When it works, and when you have days like the last day last year, it was riveting. It really was. But I'm not sure the depth of commentary was quite there this year as well. I think there were a couple of things that at times they were just clutching at straws and there was misinformation out there at times and just stuff they just got wrong. So that's all I'm saying, because it wasn't the quality of play and the volume of trades taking place. That's what I'm trying to say.
My favourite part of trade period, undoubtedly, was Hound Wars between Tom Brown and Mitch Cleary. Every day, watching on Twitter and then deciding to turn on Channel 7 when Jared and I were in studio here and watching who got on first. Oh, Ash, it's popcorn ready sort of stuff.
Who was in the top box and who was in the bottom box? So, yeah. Well, Mitch is a very good operator, and Tom he's now got his beloved chief football writer's chief football reporting job for Channel 7. So it'll be great for the network to have two people, the two sort of alpha males pushing each other. I think it's good for 7, and leaves their competitors in the commercial TV space in their way.
What have you made of Hound Wars so far, Jimmy?
I haven't probably paid as close attention to it
as me.
Yes. I do like the lighter side of it. Jungle Drums versus Tom Brown.
Jungle Drums?
Yeah, Mitch Cleary, the Jungle Drums. That was his trade radio, his initial trade radio little segment, hearing the Jungle Drums.
Was it? I can't remember that.
Get to know the alpha dogs of the footballing world, will you? There'll be posters of them soon.
Well, you mentioned posters. Ash, I did see a little promo come out over the weekend on 7. Have you seen this promo?
With Mitch?
With Mitch and Tom and Tim Watson?
Yes, I did see that one.
It's funny to me because I don't think Mitch is comfortable with all that promo sort of stuff. And yet there he was.
Well, it's a different beast commercial TV. You've done a bit, you know, you dabble in that space, and so do you, Jimmy. I don't, but there are certain things you have to do, don't you? When you sign the contract at a place like 7, and that one of them is doing the cheesy promos.
Are you contracted at 7 next year?
Are you talking to me?
I'm looking at you.
I've never been contracted by 7.
Oh, hang on.
I've been on that.
Blow me over with a feather.
No, I've been the old last one, the pay-per-view sort of thing.
Oh, your pay-per-view?
Yeah.
Press red for Jimmy.
Yeah, that sort of scenario.
Would you like to do more TV stuff?
I enjoy going to the footy, don't you?
I enjoy listening to you when you're on the boundary.
I appreciate the feedback.
More Sports Day with Ash coming up after this. Ash, I want to ask you about Earl Eddings at Cricket Australia. I also want to ask you about John Gruden stepping down as the coach of the Las Vegas Raiders after what was a pretty controversial few days in the US and for the Raiders. More with Ash Brown after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and for Wilson Homes. Ash Brown is the chief of the AFL Record, now turned social and political commentator. And he joins Jimmy and I for his second segment of the hour. Ash, let's talk about what's going on in the US. A fascinating story involving Jordan Gruden stepping down as the coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. It was after the New York Times ran an article which detailed emails about some of the language that he had used over a 7-year period. Some of it was racist, some of it was misogynistic, other languages was homophobic. And he's been given the arse for it, essentially.
It's one of the most extraordinary, I know I'm a big NFL fan, it's one of the most extraordinary couple of hours that I can remember as a fan of that sport.
Yeah.
Sam, I mean, the story dropped the New York Times, I reckon probably American time, about 7:30 at night, and by 9 o'clock, halftime Monday Night Football, of which Gruden spent a long time as the color commentator, he was fired, or he resigned before being fired by the Raiders. So quite an extraordinary story for it to drop. It's the commentary subsequent has been really interesting as well, because he's sort of he's almost in a way a bystander. The main investigation was into the Washington football team that used to be known as the Redskins, and there's been a long investigation by the NFL into that. These emails turned up as part of that investigation. They were leaked firstly to the Wall Street Journal before the weekend. There were some remarks that Gruden had made about DeMaurice Smith, who's the head of the Players Union.
Yeah.
And then the full release of the emails on the Monday night in the New York Times. Quite an extraordinary story that it dropped the way it did. And John Gruden is a football, but what they call over there, a football lifer. You know, he's been a coach and a commentator, won a Super Bowl, just a long-standing NFL personality, very high-profile one at that. And for him to sort of be dismissed in that fashion is quite remarkable. It's a very sorry end to what was what had been a great career. But, I mean, it was the actions. His emails were defensible, and the Raiders had no choice but to move him on.
You're right, Ash. Severe brand damage for John Gruden, but probably not severe financial damage. When he signed for the Raiders, 10 years, $100 million contract, you'd imagine a significant amount of that would be paid out.
Yeah, well, the lawyers would be involved now, won't they, Jimmy, to sort out what he gets.
I wonder how much would be paid out, Ash and Jimmy. I mean, he would have broken part of his contract, I assume.
$100 million, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean,
he'll get a bit of it, but yeah. He won't. Certainly, that he was dismissed with cause. I mean, that was couched as a resignation, but that probably salvaged a bit of the remainder of the contract by resigning as opposed to being sacked. But huge damage to his brand, and he'll never coach again. And he may. It's interesting. I mean, do they forgive over there like we've forgiven over here? I mean, for a long time, Wayne Carey's name was toxic, but you know, he's re-established himself as a fairly prolific media performer after a few years. Will time forgive Gruden and he go back to the media? He was actually very good as the main the colour guy on Monday Night Football. So that may be an option from down the track, but certainly he'll be laying low for a long time. All sorts of discussions with the NFL about the sorts of things he was saying in these emails, is that still the true nature of the sport? The NFL is trying really hard to become progressive, and they've got an ad campaign they're running this year about to try and demonstrate what a progressive league it's become. But they're facing a battle to win people's minds over minds and hearts over when this sort of stuff gets released.
You mentioned Gruden was a lifer, and another lifer of not only NFL but in particular college football, Urban Meyer, who, you know, came up to coach NFL, you know, dipped his toe back in. That looks like it's going to go pear-shaped, and both of these gentlemen are going to get a lesson in the modern world with technology. You know, obviously Gruden with his emails and Urban Meyer being filmed, being a little bit naughty the night before a game.
Yeah, well, night after game.
Night after,
I mean, he didn't fly home with his team that had 0-4 at the time, Jimmy. I don't know if an AFL coach has ever not flown home with the team, but he's in trouble for that. He's just a bad appointment. He's just a college coach who, it's a very different game in a lot of ways, college football to the NFL, and I think he was ill-suited to be an NFL coach, and this is an example of it. But, yeah, it's only a matter of time before he finishes up with the Jaguars as well. So, two really big names in that sport of sort of their reputations are in tatters at the moment.
Ash, speaking of tatters, Cricket Australia have now had, or they're about to have their third chair in, what, 3 years? David Peaver left in 2018. Earl Eddings has resigned just a day before he was going to stand for re-election. It's a bit messy.
Very messy. And, I mean, I'm not across cricket like I am in the footy world, but clearly there's major power struggles to take place in the at board level at Cricket Australia. And you've got the state, you know, I think he was in trouble. He was called by the WA delegate and said, you don't have our support anymore. And that was it for him. Whereas the AFL has thrived for, you know, for 30 years now, really, with independent commission. And the NRL eventually saw the writing on the wall and ditched the clubs for its own independent commission. And there's been a lot of gnashing of teeth in cricket circles as to why they haven't gone down the same path. And the state still holds so much power. I mean, we joke about the New South Wales, even though Cricket Australia is based in Melbourne, has been for a long time. I mean, we joke about the power that New South Wales holds in Australian cricket, and I think he didn't have the support early innings of New South Wales, and that's a fairly fundamental part. I think you've got to keep the people up in Sydney pretty happy if you want to retain a position of authority in Australian cricket.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair point. It would be a bigger story, I reckon, if there was more confidence surrounding England's chances of winning the Ashes, but apparently everyone, including my co-host, thinks that we're going to do it easily when the Poms come across.
Well, don't they call the Poms always like to say the Australian team's the worst team to ever arrive on their shores. And I think a few commentators are already saying this will be the weakest English team to arrive on our shores at the moment. Not a lot of batting and elderly bowlers. So we'll see. It's still an Ashes series. And one thing that Australia hasn't had is a lot of red ball cricket, have they? So that would, and whereas England's played a lot more test matches than Australia recently. So I think that might count for something when they do get here.
Ash, great to have you on as always. What's keeping your focus now that footy season and trade period is over?
We've got a few. Well, we're going to start the AFL Records season guide. That starts work. We start work on that next week, and that's a big project.
The Bible.
And a couple of other things. Yeah, the Bible. We start work on that, and a couple of projects on the side, Sam. So I'm trying to keep myself busy as best I can.
Thanks, Ash. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Ash Brown there, Chief of the AFL Records, social and political commentator now, and working on the Bible, the AFL Record. Jeez, it was the best thing to carry around in the backpack.
It was
when
heavy.
When you go to a game. It was heavy, but it was worth it.
Yeah, it was good. Oh, I need to check something. There you go.
That's right. And as the year went on, you got better at finding little tabs. More Sports Day coming up. We just finished with Ash around cricket. We're going to head to the UK next. Henry Moran from the BBC is going to join us. Just how poor is this England team? What chance are they of knocking us off? More after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're powered by Red Energy, Cairns' most trusted energy retailer nationally, and for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. The AFL trade period, thank goodness, is over. It went out with a whimper. And we're going to talk some cricket now, because that is the sport of the summer coming up. And as if we needed anything else other than the Ashes, there was to-ing and fro-ing. Will they come? Won't they come? What are the restrictions going to be? How many days quarantine? But the good news is that Joe Root's men are on their way. They have named a 17-man squad for the Ashes. Ben Stokes, Joffa Archer, Ollie Stone and Sam Curran are the only four that are unavailable. So we thought we'd get in BBC cricket presenter extraordinaire, Henry Moran. Henry, welcome to you. Welcome to Sports Day.
Lovely to be here. How are you doing?
We're doing really well. Henry, how strong is this squad without those four?
It's pretty much as much as England could have hoped for, because, you know, it's only about 10 days ago we were going through the list of those names that you'd normally expect to see in an England squad and thinking, well, who's going to be missing? Because there was all this talk about players being slightly cautious about the amount of touring that's happened in the last 18 months or so, and that the pressures that might be on in terms of quarantine and one thing and another. And so to have Joe Root there leading the side, to have Stuart Broad there, Joss Butler, those names that, you know, you look at and you think they really are the ones that England's team is built around. That is a huge thing for England, because to not go into an Ashes tour with those would be a real stretch and a real strain for England. So that is a big, big bonus. The question now is how they're going to cope without that key all-rounder of Ben Stokes. He missed the last Ashes in Australia. He dominated parts of that Ashes series in England in 2019. And so to not have him as that crucial balancing figure in the middle of the lineup, that's going to be the big miss for England.
Henry, can I take that a little bit further? Jeffrey Boycott said Joe Root's man must be ready because Australia can be cruel. I've heard Angus Fraser on different parts go, it can be a brutal place. It tests everything physically, mentally. You've got the experienced bowlers. There's no Stokes. But you go through the batting lineup, you know, the squad that's been picked. Bess, Crawley, Hamid. You even go to Dan Lawrence, 23, 24-year-olds coming out to Australia. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, massively tough. And I think there's no greater test for any player, any England player playing Ashes cricket. There is no greater test than playing in Australia. And if you look back to the last time that England had success in Australia in an Ashes series in 2010-11, it was that top three that did so much of the damage. That top four, arguably, with Strauss, Cook, Trott, Peterson, all real battle-hardened players that had been there and done it before. I think the interesting thing for England in this series is there isn't that expectation, because going into the last few, there's always been that sense of, well, you know, we've got great players, we're doing really well, we've won a lot of series coming into it. Actually, there isn't that much pressure on England. So there is maybe just a little bit on Joe Root because of the year that he's had. He's been in astonishing form against India, both in India and at home during the English summer. But there isn't that much pressure on the likes of Haseeb Hamid, who comes into the side having played a handful of test matches. And the conversation, the narrative in England is quite an interesting one at the moment, because normally at this time of year building up to an Ashes series, it's all this talk about, well, can England win? And actually, there is a little bit of that. But really, it's, you know, we're so glad that this series is happening because there were so many concerns that it wouldn't. And this team go out there, they know that they're under the pressure, they haven't got their leader in terms of the all-rounder on the field, Ben Stokes. So let's just see what happens. So maybe that lack of pressure will just help England a little bit. And let's not forget, this is an England team that has played an awful lot more test cricket in the last 2 years than Australia has, and that could be quite significant.
Okay, Henry, the Australian top three has night sweats over Broad and Anderson. So we're pretty much 3 for 10 in the last couple of Ashes series. Jack Leach looks like the number one spinner. So he's going to roll out 58 and a half overs each innings. But who's getting the middle order? Who's the fourth bowler? Is it Wokes and Wood go to the tried and tested? Or are you going to roll out a young Ollie Robinson, or you go back to Craig Overton?
This is a good question. I think Ollie Robinson is a really exciting bowler for England. He had a brilliant breakthrough summer this year. He doesn't seem to be fazed by the big pressures of test match cricket. And I think the way that he bowls is quite an interesting one. There was quite a lot of comparisons with Josh Hazlewood in that sense that sort of tall, bowls a heavy ball. He just somehow manages to get wickets when others seem to be struggling to do so. He's got that real sort of grit, that power, that determination. And he bowls a sort of length that's quite effective on those hard, bouncy pitches that we're going to see quite a lot of in Australia. I think there's going to be certainly a lot of reliance on Mark Wood to be the express bowler, but he's not the sort of bowler you'd think would play full five test matches just because of the fitness issues that he's had. This would be a very different England team if they had Jofra Archer. We know what he can do. We know how good a bowler he is and how quick he is. But England don't have that, so they're going to have to look to alternatives. Chris Wokes is an increasingly clever, canny cricketer. He'll be particularly effective if the ball moves any way laterally. But I think you look at Ollie Robinson, the way that he bowls, the power that he's got, and the speed that he bowls at, I think it could be really interesting. And let's not forget, he's not going to be seen by many of the Australian players, and that makes quite a difference as well. So there is quite a lot of excitement as to what Robinson could do. I think, as ever, though, people are looking at James Anderson and Stuart Broad and thinking, well, this could be, you know, again, where England look to try and put the pressure on Australia's top order. And I had quite an interesting conversation with Jimmy Anderson after the last Ashes series. And there was all this talk, well, is this the last time you're going to be in Australia? He looked at me like I was an idiot and said, of course it's not, because I don't want to leave my final memory of Australia and playing against Australia in the Ashes to be a losing one. So he's determined and he wants to have success.
What about the batting order and the lineup? I mean, I know Joe Root, you tell me, Henry, if this is overstating, it's probably in career best form. But other than that, there's a lot of averages of mid-30s and under in the middle order. Does that concern locals over there as you make the trip across?
Yeah, no question. That's absolutely the worry. And Root's year has been absolutely outstanding. I mean, if he manages to score 80 more runs at the end of this calendar year, he will have scored more runs in 2021 than Tim Payne has in his entire test career.
That's amazing.
That is the sort of level of year that Joe Root has had. And you know, and he has had an extraordinary year. And as always with these things, when one player does much better than anyone else, it's brilliant, but then you worry what happens when they stop performing and they go out of a bit of form. And so there is a lot of pressure on Rory Burns, on Haseeb Hameed, on Dan Lawrence. The one that I like as a pick for England is David Malan, who scored 100 at the Wacker in the last Ashes series. So he's been there, he's done it. He's a little bit older, more experienced. And so I'm pleased to see him in that side. That's, I think that's a good pick. But there is a little bit of fragility there. The likes of Ollie Pope could be outstanding, but has yet to necessarily do it consistently. But Ashes series are opportunities as well as huge sort of pressure situations. So if one player goes well in the first game, it could be vital. I look back to James Vince getting run out for 83 at the Gabba in the last series in Australia. I think if he goes on to make 100, not only is it a very different series, but he has a very different international career. So it's small margins. And as always, so much will rest on that first game. Who performs, who does well, who gets in a bit of form.
Now, spot on, Henry. And yeah, Ollie Pope is a prodigious talent, just yet to hit that mark at the moment. Now, cricket and the press go hand in hand in England. They're either with you or against you.
I think anything and the press go hand in hand in England. Yeah.
They either have Australia in their sights or they have their own team in their sights. When they leave the shores, what's the vibe going to be like?
I think it's going to be reasonably positive, actually, because we've got this, you know, fragility with sport at the moment. And I think that because the last 18 months have had sport cancelled and tours cancelled, and be it football to cricket, there's been this sense that when you see sport, it feels like a real privilege. No longer is it a right, because we've been without it. And we've had that experience of realising quite how special it is to be able to see high-level sport happening. And so I think there will be a little bit of forgiveness to the England side. And also because the narrative of, you know, the challenges that have existed in the last 2 years have been quite well put forward. And there's been quite a lot of understanding that initially, inevitably, there was that slight sense, well, you're highly paid athletes. What on earth are you complaining about? But when it's all broken down and the pressures that have been put under some of these players that have had to go into month after month after month of quarantine to be entertaining the public, essentially, there is a little bit more understanding and acceptance of those difficulties that people have had. So I think that sense is possibly going to help England. And there is, as I say, just a little bit less expectation on this tour because of the players that are missing, because of the way that Australia have been in the last couple of Ashes series in Australia. So, you know, if England lose heavily in the first game, that could all change. But at the moment, I think it's quite a timid, relaxed press that are quite happy to see the England team go, give it a good shot and see what happens after the first couple of matches.
Henry, great to have you on. We're looking forward to the first test here. We hope it's a whitewash and it's 4-0 and we send your boys packing. But, you know, in the interest of fairness, good luck in the upcoming series.
No worries at all. I'm going to get back to trying to decipher what Justin Langer was on about on LinkedIn.
No, don't. Henry, do us a favour or do yourself a favour. Don't ever try to wonder or translate what Justin Langer is talking about. We've tried that here before many times. It hasn't worked.
All right, I'll do my best.
Good on you, Henry. Henry Moran there, BBC cricket presenter extraordinaire. A little bit of confidence in the England camp, as I assume there would have to be. Going into an Ashes tour, I don't think, you know, I've listened to the likes of Alan Border and Brendan Julian in the last few days who think it's going to be, you know, 3-1, 4-0. I'm not so sure. They've played a lot more cricket than us in the last 18 months.
But what's been highlighted is their three probably go down as the three, they're their greatest players, top 10, you know, wherever you rank people.
Yep.
You know, Broad, Anderson and Root.
Yep.
The two bowlers, it's so much weighs on their shoulders.
Definitely.
And he just highlighted it. It's Joe Root or bust at the moment. They've got a young emerging top six.
Yeah, but you almost guarantee that one of those, well, I'm not saying dominate the series, but one of those will pop up and make us think, oh, hang on.
Well,
this bloke's all right.
Ollie Pope's the one they're wanting to pop. He mentioned it there.
We know his talent.
Yeah, but he just really hasn't exploded on the test scene just yet.
Okay, more coming up on Sports Day after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Cairnsar's most trusted energy retailer, and for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Earlier tonight, we caught up with new Adelaide recruit, former Swan, Jordan Dawson.
Cheers. Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks for having me.
A few nerves along the way, I'm sure?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I think the last 10 days have been pretty full on, but obviously it's a massive relief, getting the trade done, and both parties were somewhat happy, I think, so that's good.
Jordan, further that, obviously trade period, it's all, I guess, the misinformation that goes on, gets put out there and people offering all their opinions on it. How hard is it to tune that out and just listen to what, you know, the Swans and the Crows are telling you?
Yeah, well, I just tried to stay off my phone as much as I could and not really read the media. Talking to Michael, my manager, and he was pretty clear before it sort of happened that, that you know, the trade week will be pretty busy and there'll be a lot of articles and a lot of media stuff, just obviously because that's the important time. So it's going to, not everything's going to be true that you read. So try and sort of stay away from it, which is what I did. But yeah, obviously it's a massive relief now.
Not going to make you, you know, say what you didn't like about Port Adelaide, but what did you like about Adelaide that the Crows that made it attractive for you to go there?
Yeah, I think growing up, I was a Crows fan and, you know, idolised a few of those players like Ricciuto and McLeod and Tyson Edwards and these guys. And I think just the fit that, that you know, Nixie and the coaches put towards me of where they see me playing and the role I can play with the group was really enticing. And I feel I can add a lot to their group.
So, Jordan, what do you want to achieve now as an Adelaide player? I mean, it's interesting to me because obviously you've gone home, which we all understand, but you've left a team that really looks like it's on the precipice of challenging for a flag for a side that may do that as well, but probably not as quickly. What's the main ambition for you in your first year at the Crows?
Yeah, for me, I think there's a lot of the demographic of the group is quite young. I think it reminds me of Sydney last year and probably the year before, just of, yeah, they've been competitive in a lot of games, but the experience wasn't quite there. And I feel like I can sort of be one of the older guys in that younger group coming through and have sustained success. And obviously I know that, you know, the last couple of years have been pretty tough for them, but they're definitely building. And I feel like I can add a lot to the group on and off the field and add some leadership as well.
Positional wise, we saw you have a fantastic year, half back, wing, hitting the scoreboard, pushing forward. Cut and pace, put that in at the Crows or something a little bit different?
Yeah, I think so. Talking to Nixie and the coaches, I think that's where they want me to play, and I'm definitely happy with playing sort of up on the wing and mid and stuff like that. I feel like that's obviously where I play my best footy, and I feel like I can add a lot of value to the team up there as well.
Geez, they got you for a bit of a bargain, didn't they? Melbourne's future first, and that could be pick 18. You're a top 10, top 5 pick, aren't you, Jordan?
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I don't do the trades, mate. I just sat back and let the team sort that out. So I'm not sure you're the expert in that area.
You don't make the waves; you just ride them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, don't get sucked into that. Hey, is there a player from is there a player from the Crows that you're interested to get to know? Because when you always you go to another club or a player comes from another club, they've got a certain opinion of some players. Is there someone that you're interested to find out about or from another way that you'd love to just see how they go about their business?
Yeah, I think I've sort of already got to know Paul Seedsman a little bit and feel like we can work pretty closely on the wings and with the midfield group. And he's a ripping fella and I'm looking forward to sort of getting to know him a bit more and working more on field as well with him.
Jordan, can you just take us through whatever you want to tell us or don't want to tell us, the main reason for wanting to go home? Because, you know, obviously in a normal world, going home gets criticised when you can move so freely between state and state. But in the last 18 months or 2 years, COVID has really changed a lot of things with that. We've seen, you know, Lachie Neal and his partner and wife, Jules, wanting to raise their child in Western Australia. And, you know, in usual circumstances, it would be, well, you could just go home whenever you want. But Western Australia border is currently closed at the moment. Has COVID really made it harder for guys like you wanting to spend more time with their family?
Yeah, definitely. I think probably the last 2 years we've spent maybe 2 months, if not more, 3 months on the road both seasons. So that's been pretty testing and that sort of pull to come back home and be closer to friends and family and be able to play footy was there. And, yeah, I couldn't really deny it by the end. when I requested a trade.
Maybe now you'll be too close. Are you going to move straight back into the family home or make sure you find somewhere else quick smart?
Nah, I won't be doing that. the family are about 3 hours south in Robe. So
okay.
It might be a bit too far to travel, I think. But I'll just look for somewhere in Adelaide.
Which is a good excuse for you, not being home every single day of the week.
Exactly.
Jordan, it's great to have you on. I'm sure it's been a whirlwind, mate, the last 2 or 3 weeks. I can only imagine the anxiety that goes with wanting to be traded and it gets done on the second last day. But you're there now. Where do we find you at the moment? Are you in South Australia?
Yeah, yep. I've just been back and forth from Adelaide and Robe. So I'm just sort of hanging around those areas. I'll try and get up to Adelaide as much as I can before the pre-season starts. And I've already met a few boys and coaches and stuff, so it'd be nice to get familiar with everyone and the facilities and everything like that before we actually crack into it.
And no doubt you'll be winning the first time trial on day one of pre-season?
I think there's a few good runners, so I wouldn't put that bet on, but I'm looking to come back fit and healthy. That's the main thing.
Jordan, well done. Good luck in your first season at the Crows.
Cheers. Thanks for having me, boys.
Jordan Dawson, their new Adelaide recruit. First time we've had him on this show. Speaks very well. He's a good pickup for the Crows and I reckon a significant loss for the Swans. Taking the pick in the 50s, pick 56 a few years ago. So it's a nice pick for the Swans.
Yeah, well done by the Swans and their development, yep. But they're very good at that. They've turned rookie list players into all Australians.
Tom Papley.
Yeah, they've got heaps of them. They've done that with, if you go back to Nick Smith and guys like that.
Nick Smith's a great one.
Yep. So, buy low, sell high. It's great list management, great development.
Jimmy Bartel is here for the new McCafe blend. Coffee fit for an Aussie. More on Sports Day after this. That does us for this Thursday evening, Jimmy. It was a lovely day today after the rain. It was one of the best spring days we've had in a while. I think it's going to be wet and cold tomorrow.
Spring's great. Sun's nice. Get outside.
You gonna go for a jog tomorrow? Go for a trundle?
Yeah. Might after we do a bit of radio tomorrow.
A Friday night jog?
Yeah.
No. Friday night's a time for a wine.
Yeah. Make you feel like you've earned that one. That knockoff.
I'd prefer.
Get on the beers.
Ah.
With Thunder Dan.
Yeah. We'll go out with Dan. See you tomorrow, folks.